you've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Hello, hello, Launch Street. Tamara here. You know how I always talk about going wide and then going deep in innovation, how I think we get too myopic in our view and we need to look up and out every now and again? I just think, and really it's been my experience, that there are so many lessons outside our day-to-day world that we can borrow from. And today's podcast is a great example of this. I'm talking to a real estate investor, and we're a little bit all over the place. We talk about innovation, we talk about investing, not my usual guest, but there are a lot of lessons in our conversation that really apply to the rest of us. I think especially the part about seeing the gaps, about being agnostic. Love when he talks about how ignorance is expensive. So who is this he I'm talking about? He is Marco Santarelli. He's the president of Noreda Real Estate, which is a premier real estate investing firm. He's host of the Passive Real Estate Investing Podcast, which, by the way, he also has a book coming out this fall with that same name, and it's free. We'll put some links in the show notes. It's really an interesting podcast, so I think you're going to enjoy it. Before we dive in, let me just say that I really appreciate the whole thing about real estate being a people business. You'll hear us talk about that in the very beginning. I think tech does so much, but if you find your value, it's hard to replace you, the human side. We can do what tech can't. We can innovate. So if you want to know how you innovate, go to our website, gotolaunchstreet.com, and take the assessment to discover your everyday innovator style. That link is in the show notes. All right, let's do this. Marco, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Thank you, Tamara. I'm excited to be here and looking forward to this interview.
So what's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
Well, I don't want to embarrass myself, so I'm not going to say those things, but surprised. I get a reaction. This is kind of an interesting question. I rarely get asked this in an interview, but I guess the first thing that came to mind was that I actually have a parrot that we let fly freely around the house. And, you know, we have a very big open house, so he has a lot of room, but certainly that bird is married to me. He sits on my shoulder and he observes everything I do, including my work. It's kind of a bizarre thing, but it's amazing how intelligent birds are. And so that's kind of a quirky thing.
Okay. So here's what I want to know about that. So, because I have this vision in my head, I think it's very obvious to get a dog or a cat, right? I have a dog, but you know, like that's an obvious choice. What made you decide to go the bird route?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've actually been interested in birds. I was fascinated by birds from a very, very young age. In fact, I actually vividly remember being in elementary school. I was probably in like second, third grade, and I caught myself many times just standing in the schoolyard staring up at all the birds and seagulls and whatever else were flying in the air. And I would watch them for minutes on end. And I don't know if it was a fascination or just a dream to be able to fly, but I've always been intrigued by birds. And then I went to a San Diego park with my wife and daughter one day about 5.5 years ago, maybe 6 years ago. And there was a group of people there that are from a bird rescue organization. And so they take birds in and they, you know, nurse them back to health, and they keep most of them. They don't necessarily give them away or sell them. But they had this one. It was beautifully colored. It was completely rainbow colors. It wasn't the large macaw, but it was just a small, what we call a sun conure. So it's considered a medium-sized parrot. But I was fascinated by the intelligence of these birds. They were trained, and they were able to do tricks, and they were beautiful, and they were friendly. And I thought, geez, what a cool pet. So my daughter wanted a dog, but she didn't have the responsibility at the time, being 5 or 6. So I thought, well, hey, why don't we get a parrot? We'll train the parrot. And our parrot is fully house trained and can do a lot of tricks. And they're very intelligent. They're like a perpetual 2-year-old.
Right, that's like built-in entertainment when people come over.
It is built into entertainment. Yeah,
I love it.
They're funny.
That's good. So I want to frame our conversation in the context of innovating inside a fairly structured industry, which in your case, your expertise, and you built a very successful company, Norada, inside real estate. Talk to me a little bit, just high level, about the real estate industry and why it's ripe for opportunity, for disruption, and really for a lot of us to get into it.
Yeah, so you couldn't have picked a better industry to implement change and disruption, because real estate is by nature very fragmented. If you stop to think about it, even though we're talking about housing, no two houses are exactly the same. In fact, every single house is unique. It has a different address to start with, so that's different. It's on a different piece of land, the lot that it sits on. And even though it may be the same builder, same floor plan, what you find inside and outside of that house may be different. So one listing is different than the next listing. And really, people think this is a property business, but it's really a people business. You're always dealing with people at every level of real estate. So the fact that this industry has always been fragmented and still is to this day, even with the technology that's available online, such as Zillow and other websites where it aggregates all the MLS data and property public records data, you're still dealing with a fragmented commodity. So because of that, there's always going to be a need for people to be involved to help guide, counsel, educate the consumer when it comes to real estate, whether it's your home or whether it's for rental purposes, such as the investment properties that, you know, we've been selling for over 15 years.
So I want to ask you about something you just kind of touched upon, because I do actually think it's important and relevant to a lot of people in a lot of industries. I hear it all the time, this kind of frustration around technology is taking over my jobs, you know?
Sure.
And you mentioned Zillow, MLS, like, et cetera, et cetera. And I just sold my house actually and moved. And yeah, I spent a lot of time on Zillow, and someone said to me, it's like, you don't need an agent anymore. And I thought, I don't know. I kind of still need someone to bounce stuff off and to guide. Like, how do you figure out your role when things like Zillow are really taking over a lot of those baseline tasks, particularly in real estate?
Unless you are very knowledgeable and experienced and you are comfortable taking care of the transaction from beginning to end, then you probably are going to be using at least one person to help with that transaction. And even at the very least, if you are selling what they call FSBO, for sale by owner, and you are doing the transaction yourself, you're showing the property and writing up the contract and handling the transaction, you're still going to need and deal with property inspectors, the title company, the escrow company, possibly a closing attorney or a real estate attorney that's handling the contract and the paperwork. There are people involved, even if you're highly seasoned. But you know, you mentioned Zillow and you just sold your house. If you actually go to a website like Zillow and you do a search, even if you're a seller and you're posting your own property, when you're on there and you're looking at properties, you will see on the side, it'll always show you 1 to 3 real estate agents that you can contact right now. You know, click a button and it'll automatically send them a message saying, hey, I'm interested in this property. I'd like more information. And so even though there's a lot of technology, the industry is still glued together by the fact that there are real estate agents and real estate brokers tied to 90% of all the transactions out there. So you can't, it's really difficult to separate. And years ago, probably over a decade ago, when we saw the internet disrupt the travel industry among other industries, we thought that real estate agents were going the way of the dodo bird. But that never happened. It's still just as strong today as it was before. It's just different. There's the tools are different, and the access to information is incredible today. Like, you don't need to rely on a real estate agent to get all the initial information and do your due diligence. You could do your due diligence and then go to the agent when you're better educated and more prepared to buy or sell.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I spent a lot of insomnia nights on Zillow, but it really didn't negate my need for someone to help me take anything to the finish line, really. So it's kind of interesting that you say that. And when you talk about real estate, I'm curious because I'm in the speaking business, right? I do a lot of keynote speaking. And I find that it's one of those industries where everybody floods it, particularly when they can't find a job or the economy's bad. Like, it's like a low barrier to entry in a lot of ways, but it's really hard to stand out and differentiate yourself in the market. So a lot of people coming in, but not a lot of, but a lot of adding to the noise, not a lot of above it. Is real estate like that too? That's kind of my perception of it, with a lot of people becoming agents and selling and investing. And how do you think about differentiating yourself and what you do, given all that? That was like such a roundabout way of asking my question.
Yeah, actually, it's the other way around. When people are flooding into real estate as real estate agents and real estate brokers, this is not true in my industry, because I'm focused specifically on the investment side, helping individuals and people build their real estate portfolios, you know, for the sake of generating income and wealth. But when you look at retail sales, like homeowners and agents that are working with homeowners, it's just the opposite. It's when times are good that people flood into the business, because they see that real estate is a vibrant, active industry, and there are a lot of people making a lot of money through commissions selling property. And they think it's easy money. And for some people it is, but for most people it isn't. So they get into the industry and they get their real estate license, and really they're essentially getting a license to be a salesperson, because ultimately that's what a real estate agent is. They're right. A salesperson first and foremost. They just have to follow certain, you know, ethical and moral rules and laws and regulations. But it's really when times are good that people flood into the industry, and it's when times are bad and the market is slowing down and sales
they
are fewer
out.
That yeah, they get out. Right.
Interesting. So I'd say real estate is one of those funny things, particularly on the investing side, which if you can talk a little bit more about kind of what that really looks like, so we can just get some context around it. I mean, I did the intro, but I think probably hearing it from you is best. But I think in general can be perceived as very lucrative, but also very risky. And I say perceived as, because I'm not sure how true that is or isn't. I'm actually looking to you to help figure that out. So how do you assess risk in the business? How do you even think about it?
I'd like to quote a friend of mine, and I'm sure you've heard of him, and probably your audience has, Robert Kiyosaki, who wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Love that book, actually.
Yeah. So I've been on several cruises with Robert, and, you know, we've had dinner together, and, you know, we talk. In fact, he's been on my podcast. He's an interesting person for sure. He will tell you that risk is not, it's not in the investment itself. Risk is a function of the person, because you can take a deal or an investment that you may perceive as risky and may be risky to you, but you give it to the right person, put it in the right hands, someone who understands it and knows what to do with it, and all of a sudden it's a gold mine for them. It's a moneymaker, and they're doing well because they understand it. So the risk is a function of the person, not the investment itself.
Wow. Before you go on, I think that's fascinating. And I think for all of us on Lawn Street, that's a great reminder. When we think about stuff in our own work, I feel like that's very true. Like the project, the initiative, the investment, if in the hands of the right person, can do incredibly well. Really, the risk is in who's managing it and how.
Yeah. And that all comes back to what I wholeheartedly believe in. And that's, I refer to it, and this is my first rule of my 10 rules of successful real estate investing, and that is to educate yourself. You know, that knowledge is a currency, and it's so critically important that you educate yourself and continue to educate yourself. And you don't need to be an expert or guru in anything, in any one thing, to be good at what you're doing. But you know, that financial education, the being financially literate, is so incredibly powerful for everything you do, whether it's, you know, at your job or career, or whether it's in investing or running a business, you mitigate and lessen and almost literally eliminate risk when you know what you're doing and you understand it. You know, things that are outside of your control, you can't control. You know, we call that third party risk. It's counterparty risk. You can't control those things. I can't control what the stock market's doing on a day-to-day basis. Not that I, you know, like the stock market or advocated, but again, if you know what you're doing, you can certainly reduce or mitigate your risk in virtually everything.
So I'm curious, you just mentioned the 10 rules for real estate investing. I'm curious what some of the other ones are, particularly maybe the ones that would be surprising or kind of sound like they're out in left field. And I love this kind of stuff, because I feel like oftentimes, even though you're talking about real estate in specific, it really relates to a lot of us in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, they're all great. And we could literally fill an entire show, 30 to 60 minutes, just going over that stuff. But you want me to kind of pick one or two out?
Yeah, pick a couple.
I think one that I think is foreign to a lot of people. They don't think about it because they've got blinders on, whether through just, you know, I don't say ignorance in a derogatory or negative way. It's just a fact of life that we're all ignorant about a lot of things. We don't know what we don't know. But something I talk about all the time, and this is actually fundamental to how I built our business, because we operate in 22 markets. We have properties available in 22 markets. Oh, wow. And the reason for that is because we are market agnostic. So my fifth rule is to be market agnostic. Here's why. And this is the aha moment a lot of people have, especially those that are in expensive markets like San Francisco or the coastal markets around the United States, and real estate's very expensive. And they're thinking to themselves, geez, I can't invest where I live. The numbers don't make sense. It's too expensive. Well, that's true. But here's the fact. The United States, you know, the country we live in, is very, very large, and it's made up of over 400 metropolitan areas. These are called local markets. So when you understand that the U.S. is made up of really over 600, but over 400 local real estate markets, and each of those markets move up and down completely independent of one another due to many local factors, then you start to realize that if I'm going to invest capital in income producing real estate, I really should make my decisions based on the fundamentals and the economics of the market. And so you start to choose markets like you would choose stocks in the stock market.
Yeah.
And that allows you to be completely agnostic.
So I want to ask about that for a second. Why do we stick to, so I live in Denver, and Denver is one of those, okay. Well, you know better than I do, but I would say that it's getting harder. It feels like it's getting harder because the prices are going up and up. How do I then go out and, first of all, actually I have two questions. One is, how do I go out and think about being truly agnostic? And second, what keeps me from doing that? Like, why am I so set on investing in my backyard? Do I perceive it as easier? They're kind of two separate questions there.
Well, you probably have five questions in there. So here's the thing. First of all, comment about Denver. Denver has appreciated a ton over the last five plus years. And what happens is, even though Denver is a strong growth market, from an income and a rate of return perspective, meaning a cash flow perspective, your prices have gone up and appreciated far faster than rents. And so when you have that gap growing year after year, you find that the numbers don't make sense anymore from an investment perspective. You're just not going to get the rates of return from what we call a cash on cash return any longer. And also, there's other problems with that, because downside risk starts to increase when you get an inflated market. And your down payments become so large that you're far better off taking your investment capital and multiplying it, leveraging it in other markets.
Right.
So to your last question, I'm trying to remember all your questions here. to your last question about why people don't, is probably one or two things. One is, you know, what I was saying before about just not knowing about it or thinking about it. You know, I lovingly call it ignorance. But when I do presentations and I have seminars and I'm educating people, I always ask them the question, fill in the blank. Ignorance is blank. And what do you think most people say when I say
bliss.
That? Right. And I say to them, no, actually, ignorance is expensive. Because what you don't know is costing you a lot of opportunity and money and growth in so many areas. Ignorance truly is expensive. Because if you knew what you could know, you would be far better off and far further ahead today than you would have, you know, otherwise. So the problem is that a lot of the quote unquote gurus out there really suggest or advise that you invest, and I say invest in quotes, air quotes, within a 1 or 2 hour radius of where you live. I never understood that logic unless you are buying to fix and flip a house. And that's really not investing anyway. That's a business. You're actually running a transactional business. Investing to me is buying and holding real estate that generates income and over time creates wealth through equity growth. If you understand that, then you can start to wrap your head around the whole thing about being market agnostic. And I could go on and on, but I'll give you a quick example to help paint the picture. I live in Southern California here, very expensive market. I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole from an investment perspective. you know, I have this trademark saying is live where you want, invest where it makes sense. And that's the whole thing about being market agnostic.
Yeah.
But let's just say I wanted to invest in the stock market and I did a lot of due diligence and I believe that the best investment today is Coca-Cola. Well, do I need to live in Atlanta, Georgia, the corporate headquarters of Coca-Cola in order to be able to invest in Coke stock?
No.
Well, of course not. That's ridiculous. So,
right.
So
that would be a waste of energy, among other things.
Yeah, exactly. So just because I live in Southern California, that should not be a reason for me to not invest in Coca-Cola. That's being market agnostic. I don't need to live in the corporate headquarters city to invest in any company. So that's the analogy I use with investing in real estate. You should invest where it makes sense and where your capital is safe and generates the highest rates of return.
So I love that, by the way, I love the word agnostic because I think that we should all be kind of idea agnostic, market agnostic. Like we sometimes passion is great for driving things forward, but sometimes I actually think that false passion or maybe even false knowledge, like you were saying about ignorance, actually gets in the way of a success that we could have.
It does. It does get in the way because two things. One, you either know what you don't know and you use that to prevent you from doing what you should be doing, knowingly or not, or you don't know what you don't know. And that's pure ignorance. You know, now you're just living in the dark and you're not, if you're not making the effort to find out what you should to learn, you know, what you should know in order to be successful, whether it's at your career or through innovation or through investing or whatever, you're just holding yourself back.
So give me another one. That's great. I love the agnostic. What's another rule in there?
Let's say, number three, never speculate. And this is something people did back in 2003, 2004, 2005, and 2006 is they were buying property and just for the sake of appreciation, they didn't care if it cash flowed or not. In fact, most of the time it didn't cash flow. But that's a terrible way to go about things because that's speculating. You might as well go to Vegas and gamble because that's all you're doing. It's hard to time a market. And if you don't know what you're doing, you're purely just chasing after appreciation. If you invest with a long-term perspective and it makes sense the day you buy it, meaning that it's cash flow positive from month one, then you're getting an immediate rate of return and you're benefiting from the equity growth over time that comes from appreciation and the amortization on the loan. So the bottom line about never speculating is to only invest in prudent investments, those that generate income from day one and in markets that are fundamentally sound. If you do that, it's very hard to fail with investment real estate. And if you don't know how to do that, there's a lot of free resources and guides and downloads and podcasts and stuff. I mean, this is all stuff we do, but ultimately, if you have the right counseling or guide to help you do this, you'll never speculate. You'll be market agnostic. You'll just do things the right way.
I'm curious about speculation. I mean, is that, how am I trying to ask this? Is that kind of like we flood in hoping, like, you know, it's like hoping for the best in the future with no, I mean, does ignorance lead to that? I guess that's my question.
I think in many cases it does because, you know, I remember back in, you know, 2003, 2004, 2005, and 2006, a lot of people were buying properties because they knew people, other people, friends that were buying properties. And nobody talked about it in terms of cash flow. People were talking about it in terms of, oh, I bought it for $150,000 and I sold it, you know, 9 months later for $180,000 and I made, you know, $30,000 gross. Well, you know, that's all well and fine, but you know, what are you going to do with that, you know, the net proceeds, that chunk of cash? You don't have residual income. You don't have perpetual income. It's when you have cash flow, you have, you know, revenue or income coming in every month that you truly get on the way to financial independence and ultimately financial freedom. And, you know, that's the thing we, you know, we want people to do. We want them to create those passive streams of income because if you really want time freedom, you need financial freedom. And to get to financial freedom, you need to be financially independent. You need to get to that milestone. And the only way to do that is to be able to have enough passive income coming in every month that if you stayed in bed to sleep or you got hit by a car and you were in the hospital for 3 months, your income wouldn't stop. Like your life wouldn't come to an end. Your family would still be able to survive. And so when you understand that, your perspective and your definition of investments and investing changes.
So that's interesting. And I would just loop that back to what you were saying earlier about risk, about, you know, if you really have a sound foundation in what you're doing, the risk is actually, and you know it, you understand the opportunity, then the risk is actually a lot less.
Oh yeah, infinitely less. Absolutely.
So I was about to ask you a question about like what's the future of real estate, but now I feel like after our conversation about speculation, I should probably change that. That's probably maybe not the right answer, or like not the right question to ask. Give me one more rule. Actually, I love it. I wish we had time for all 10. So give me one more and then we'll move on.
Sure. So this is a big one, and this is actually a segue from being market agnostic. But you know, now when you get into the tactical side of it or procedure, you know, this is exactly what we walk clients through, and that is to take a top-down approach. Well, what do I mean from that? What a top-down approach means is that we start by selecting the best real estate markets that align with that person's investment goals. Most investors, you know, they start by looking at properties. They get mesmerized by property. They'll go to Zillow or wherever, you know, talk to their real estate agent or whomever it may be. And they get presented a property and they like the looks of it. They look at photos and, you know, they might look at the pro forma and see how the numbers are. And they get mesmerized by that. And then they're locked into it. You know, this can be a big mistake if you don't consider the investment in light of the market and the neighborhood it's in. So the best approach is to first choose your city or town or whatever the market may be based on the health of its housing market and the local economy. And that means you look at unemployment, job growth, population growth, you know, you look at net migration, things like that, affordability, supply and demand. This information is freely available online. We research this stuff all the time. In fact, I track 405 metropolitan areas, so I know what's going on in every single market all the time. But once you do that, then what you do is you narrow things down to the best neighborhoods and you look at amenities, you look at schools, crime, renter demand, you know, desirability. And finally, you look at the, you know, the best deals within those neighborhoods. So what have we done? We've started with the market. We've worked our way down to submarkets and neighborhoods. And then we start looking at properties within those neighborhoods. That's the top-down approach. Most investors, without, you know, without the proper knowledge or education, they do it the other way around. They start with the property and maybe some of them actually, you know, step back and look at the neighborhood, the submarket, and maybe the, even the, you know, the market as a whole.
I would have to imagine too that when you do it the bottom up, you also get accidentally emotionally attached to the things that don't actually matter as much.
You can. And that's kind of a dangerous place to be, because when you start making decisions based on emotion, not logic, you start to make, you could potentially make bad decisions.
Will you give me an example of one of the cities so I can kind of just visually wrap my head around when you talk about like what a good city would look like with those kind of some of the trends and numbers you rattled off?
Yeah. So, well, there's many markets. It just depends on what you're looking for. So you can take a market like, let's say, Houston, Texas. You know, there's many. There's Memphis, Tennessee, Indianapolis, Indiana, on and on the list goes. But, you know, a city like Houston has a very diverse economy, a very broad industry. So there's jobs in almost every single sector. It's one of the largest city in the U.S. It's the fourth. It was the last time I checked, it was the fourth largest city in the U.S. So it's very broad and diverse. Mm-hmm. Property values, even though they're appreciating, they're still not appreciating radically above its historic average. So, you know, it's got a healthy housing market. There is inventory there. That's an important thing. The numbers work. You know, the ratio of the purchase prices to those properties in the right neighborhoods are in good proportion to the monthly rental income, and that's important in order to get a good rate of return. It's a very vibrant and robust market. Like whenever there's something that happens in Houston, it recovers very, very quickly. And another thing, I mean, without going into too much depth, we have the right teams of people there, the boots on the ground to provide us the right turnkey rental property. So those things all come together and form, you know, a good choice in terms of a market.
Well, it's what you, to loop it back to what you said in the beginning, it really at the end of the day is a people business. With all that stuff, you still need the people.
That's true. You do.
So you have a podcast. I just want to briefly mention it. So for those really looking for more real estate investing advice and to connect with you more, Passive Real Estate Investing Podcast, what do you talk about on that show?
So we talk about virtually everything related to real estate, but the slant, if you will, the focus is on being a passive real estate investor instead of an active real estate investor. And that really means that you're not watching HGTV and thinking that you have to buy a distressed property and start swinging a hammer and bringing a crew of people in, to fix the property.
Which is totally my fear around it, by the way. I'm like, that's a lot of work.
Right. Most people don't want to do that. The reality is, and this is, I'm sure, true for your audience, is we're talking about, a reasonably affluent and well-educated crowd of people. They have a career. They're hyper-focused on their career and their company. They have a family. They have their friends and, hobbies, and they like to do stuff on the weekend with their kids and their friends. So they don't have a lot of time to be finding distressed properties, fixing them up, and managing the crews and putting up all the capital and taking on that added risk. Most people in your demographic, let's say, are interested in being passive real estate investors. They want the help from, reliable and reputable people to help them build a real estate portfolio. One houses, one property becomes two, becomes three, becomes four, becomes seven, becomes eight, becomes 10. And over time, you've built up a rental portfolio that's generating passive income and creating wealth for you over the long term. And these are professionally managed, assets that you own 100% of. That's what most people want, whether they know they want that or not. And the funny thing is a lot of people, we started off this conversation about fragmentation. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't really know that, that is possible and the service exists. And not, not to sound like I'm tooting, my own horn here with our company, but that's exactly what we do. We've basically created a turnkey solution to invest in turnkey properties to do exactly that, what we talk about on the show, and that's to be a successful passive real estate investor.
That's awesome. We're going to put the link to the show in the show notes. And so I just want to make sure we covered that before I go on, because I want to bring it back to you. How do you make sure that Norada and the work that you do stands out from your competitors and you just kind of alluded to it, you kind of own a niche that maybe is actually a little less understood or known, but very important.
Yeah. So whenever you it's kind of like Steve Jobs with Apple, you come out with the iPhone, it's such a revolutionary and brilliant idea. And then all of a sudden, you have Samsung and all these other companies that come along create competitive products, right? You create a category or you expand upon a category and it's a good idea. And now all of a sudden, you have all kinds of competition, whether you create them or not, whether it was done intentionally or not, or directly or not. So that's kind of what happened back in 2003. The term turnkey existed, but it wasn't really used all that much. It really wasn't as big or as well known as it is today. I started the company late in 2003. I refer to it as January 2004. And then I marketed the crap out of that word turnkey. I really pushed it hard and I put it everywhere. It was all about turnkey real estate investments. And, a lot of competitors, many of them blatantly came to me and told me they were going to start a business and compete against me, spawned. And so, I didn't do that intentionally, but that's what happened. And so, you have this fragmentation and you have this aha moment. I had this light bulb moment when investors were coming to me saying, hey, you're buying a bunch of property. I'm educating myself and I'm literally spending tens of thousands of dollars on boot camps and education, but I'm not pulling the trigger. I need help in finding the deals. Well, I didn't want to mentor or coach anybody, but I said, hey, I see deal flow. I'll bring it to you. That's how the business was born. And that's when I started marketing it. So, was that innovative? Maybe. Was it unique? Somewhat. But I saw the opportunity because I saw a need in the marketplace and that was the niche. And so I pushed it and marketed it hard. And I grew the business and it created a bunch of competitors. And now, there's a lot of things that have been kind of standardized in the industry, but turnkey is still not, it's still loosely defined and it's not really, there is no industry definition of what it means. We've raised the bar and put a definition to it. And that's really our own definition, not necessarily everyone else's, but that's how you innovate. You have to kind of take a small step forward, create a better service or product, redefine what turnkey means or whatever that may mean, have a process. And then, you know, someone's going to copy that or pass you. They're going to do something better. And then, you know, you leapfrog, you have to look at what they're doing and say, well, you know, how do I now improve our business or the product or the industry or the service? And it, the whole thing about innovation is it never ends. You're constantly innovating.
I think that's so true. And in fact, I think that treating it like a point in time exercise is just doomed to fail because, to your point, you do it once. And I'll just keep on your Apple example. So Apple, you know, invents this incredible iPhone thing. And then Samsung and those and Galaxy and all this came in. Well, if they hadn't continued to, if they don't continue to innovate, that gap between you and the competition closes. And eventually the competition will take over. And if you look at the great companies that have fallen over our time, you know, we hear about them in the news all the time. They were usually leaders of their industry in some day. Like back in the past, they were the ones who create, you know, Kodak was the leader in photography and digital photography. So, you know, Sears invented home shopping, you know? So like they were leaders at one point and then they weren't.
Exactly. Yeah. That's funny you mentioned Kodak because I was just thinking Kodak.
Yeah, it's really a shame. But I mean, that's what happens if you treat innovation, I think, as a point in time exercise versus what you're saying, which is continually innovating. The other thing that you said that I think is really important for all of us to pay attention to is about kind of creating your own space and redefining what it means. So for in your case, I was talking about kind of turnkey investing. I think, you know, the other example that I would use on that, the kind of ubiquitous one is Cirque du Soleil, right? They reinvented what it meant to be a circus. So just because everybody else has this one definition of what this thing is, or maybe there's no definition out there and no one playing in that space, which is kind of what you did, to decide what it means and go from there, I think is really powerful.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So yeah, you need to be a constant, I don't know if constant innovator is correct grammar, but you need to be constantly innovating in order to stay competitive and ahead of everyone else, your competitors in this in any industry.
So before we leave, where would you like people to go to learn more and connect with you?
We have tons of free information, resources, downloadable guides, and actually this fall we have a book coming out named after the podcast called Passive Real Estate Investing, and we are going to give it away for free. So if anybody's interested in that, they just should sign up to our newsletter on either one of our two websites.
That's very generous.
Yeah. So the two websites where you can get all this information is passiverealestateinvesting.com. And that's really the home of the podcast. Our main website is under renovation right now. We're coming out with a whole new version of it in about a month, but it's noradarealestate.com. And Norada, for those who don't know how to spell it, is N-O-R-A-D-A, noradarealestate.com.
I do feel like the website, by the way, talk about continually innovating, is one of the things that you continually have to update. Like long gone are the days of I've invested all this time and energy in my website and now I'm done for 2 years.
Yes. It's true.
It's a never-ending battle.
You're right. The technology changes and things get better and improve. We redid our website about 7 years ago and, you know, it was cutting edge at the time. And now it's still very good, but so much has changed. And so we're kind of refreshing it and coming up with version 3.
It's fascinating to me. All right. What's your final piece of advice for those of us seeking to, maybe innovate and up our game in terms of our wealth?
Those are two different questions. I mean, if you're talking about innovation, you know, in your existing industry, look at how people are doing things in other industries that are unrelated to yours. Like if you're, you know, you mentioned basket weaving or something before yarn. That is an industry. I mean, if you look at how things are being done in one industry and you ask yourself, how can I apply some of those ideas and ways of doing business and strategies and tactics in the real estate industry or anything else for that matter, sometimes you might uncover something that is so innovative that no one else has thought about it. You know, that's one way to innovate.
I love that answer. And I will tell you, I think sometimes we hold ourselves back by thinking something like, well, nobody else has done it and there's got to be a reason. But the reason is usually because they didn't see it or they didn't pursue it.
Right. I mean, anything that's an invention today, it was just an idea at one point. And prior to that, it wasn't even an idea. It just didn't exist, period, not even in someone's mind. So you have to understand that everything at some point is an idea. Some fail, some succeed. But unless you create the reality, you would never know if it's a good idea or not. And sometimes, you know, focus groups are absolute failures. You know, the whole thing with a focus group is you get, you know, this group think going on, and people are trapped in the groove of every day, the way things are on a day-to-day basis, that they have a hard time to think outside the quote unquote box. And this is why people like Steve Jobs, you know, he didn't do focus groups. You know, he just went out and dreamed, you know, ideas, and he just thought, what is possible? What could we do?
Well, and so, I am a big believer that an idea is only as good as people's willingness to pay for it. So an idea on papers is not worth shit to me. And until you test it, I don't think you really have an idea of if it's good, if it's viable, and how to improve it. Because frankly, you can't out of the gate get it 100% right. You don't have all the information yet. So it drives me a little bit. That's my soapbox about focus groups. It drives me a little bit bonkers when people, I've been through this years and years of my business. You make decisions based on the conference room. I think you got to make decisions based on the marketplace.
Yeah. Well said. That's good.
Well, Margo, this has been fantastic. I know we've been a little bit all over the place between kind of like some nitty gritty and real estate investing and innovating, but as you just kind of summed it up for us, I think we can learn, all of us in all industries can learn a lot from what's happening in yours, particularly one with the structure and the change that you're experiencing. So thank you for coming on.
Tamara, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Fascinating, right? I think I got a little bit of real estate and innovation advice on this one. Now, here's the thing. We love our listeners here at Inside Launch Street. Hopefully we show you that every day. In fact, we love you so much that we'd love to have more of you, more of people like you. So how about sharing our podcast with another everyday innovator, someone that you know wants to up their game just like you. So click share on your iPhone, Samsung, whatever, and let's spread the innovation love. Tamara out.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, LaunchStreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.